Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 16th, 2016. This is episode 1253. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And by Credit Karma. This year, you may not make it to the gym every day, but you can work out your credit score with Credit Karma. Get your free credit report at creditkarma.com and see why over 45 million people have joined. That's creditkarma.com. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to. It's raining out, isn't it?
It's willy waving.
Here in the dry state of California. How nice is that? If you want to talk about high tech, I'm here to do it. I was just running around the studio testing my... See, I saw the president wear this. So I figure this has to be the smart watch to wear.
Which one is it?
That is the... Well, first of all, tell me, what do you think? Attractive?
It looks like a black wristy. Actually, it looks like you're Lindsay Lohan and you just got out of jail.
It does kind of, doesn't it? I think, I saw him, he did Jerry Seinfeld's driving around with, what is it called? Driving around in cars to get coffee with comedians or the president, as the case may be. And he was wearing this. First of all, I figured they wouldn't let the president wear an Apple Watch out of the building. Actually, he probably couldn't wear a smartwatch out of the building at all because they're geolocating. And all you'd have to do is, it wouldn't be hard, I think, to take advantage of the fact that he's wearing that. This is a Fitbit Surge, which is probably, despite all the attention paid to the Apple Watch, the best-selling smartwatch. Fitbit is easily the best-selling fitness tracker. See the word tracker right there. That's probably something you don't want the president to be wearing, a tracker. So I figure he wears it inside the White House and then puts on something, a Timex when he goes out of the house. But I noticed he was wearing that. I thought, well, gosh, I got to get me one of them. One of them presidential smart things. So it does. They're all the same. They don't do anything special. It's sad. It's depressing. I figure there's no unicorns. We know Jeb Bush wears an Apple Watch because it, did you see that? It rang. He was giving a press briefing. let me see if I can find the video of this. Because it just shows you where we stand in terms of smartwatches. He was talking to... the Des Moines Register, Iowa caucus coming up. I was talking to their editorial board, doing a little interview, and the phone rings. Actually, it's worse than that. Listen again. Somebody says hello.
No.
Jeff looks around.
Your watch?
My watch can't be talking.
Yeah, it can.
It is.
Is it my watch?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I'll call you back.
Who was it said? The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed. Some of us live with the future on our wrists. Some of us are baffled when our wrist talks to us. That can't be my watch. Yeah. Somebody must have, it must have been a gift. Or he just got it and he hasn't quite figured out what to do with it. This watch, the Fitbit Search, doesn't talk to you. That may be an advantage. It does look, you're right, like I'm under house arrest a little bit. It measures your heart rate. It has a built-in GPS. That's nice. Although they warn you. So they say this has 5, 6, 7 days battery life. But if you use the GPS, it's 5 hours. So obviously GPS built into a watch drains the battery pretty fast. But for runners and stuff, having a GPS, not having to tie it to a phone like you do with the Apple Watch is handy. I bring this up because we are expecting in a couple of months in March, Apple to announce the next Apple Watch. I know, seems a little early, doesn't it? Seems like we haven't quite got used to the first Apple Watch. Maybe they can make some big improvements. Maybe they'll build in a GPS or a camera would be interesting, wouldn't it? If you could make, I mean, it's already baffling that you can make a phone call. You can, by the way, on the Apple Watch. Your phone will ring, brrr, buzzes your wrist. You press a button, which obviously Mr. Bush did in some accidental fashion. And then the person says, hello, in a little tinny voice. And you say, hello. And then you giggle and you say, I've seen it happen, so I know. I'm talking to you on my watch. I've done it. It's a little weird. It's a little disconcerting. And everybody around you, as you can see, can hear what, you know, everybody talking to you. It's probably more like what you would do, what you would just say, just what Mr. Bush did. I'll call you. I'm talking to my watch. I'll call you back. And you heard the laughter. I mean, I think the people on the Des Moines Register editorial board kind of knew that that's the kind of first silly thing you do when you get an Apple Watch. But a camera. Bad enough when people walk into the street while texting. The pedestrians just walk in front of traffic because they're typing furiously on their smartphone. Now they'll be talking. Yeah, I'm... oh, watch out. Their car almost hit me. Yeah, no, I'm just... I'm going to work. Crazy. Crazy. Unfortunately, the GPS on this does not have maps. So it doesn't tell you where you are. It merely tells you how far you've run or walked. And your heart rate. Does a heart rate pretty well. But so does an Apple Watch. So does an Android Watch. I think they're all kind of the same. I keep hoping for better. I don't even want to think about how much I've spent trying to find a magic watch. They don't make them yet. Bad news for Bitcoin. Did you invest money in Bitcoin? I want to laugh a little bit because the Winklevoss twins did. They said it was the next big thing. Who are the Winklevoss twins? You might remember them from the Facebook movie, The Social Network. They're the Harvard rowing twin brothers who sued Mark Zuckerberg saying, hey, we invented Facebook. He just stole it from us. We had the idea, hired Mark to write it, and then he kind of disappeared, said, oh, yeah, I'll get back to you on that, and invented Facebook. And they sued him, and we don't know how the lawsuit ended, but I think they made a little money on it. And then, kind of fittingly, promptly sunk into the next big thing, Bitcoin. Turns out, not maybe the next best big thing. Bitcoin did get as high as, what was it, $1,200 a coin? What is Bitcoin? It's what they call a cryptocurrency, which isn't a good name for it. All money, including the U.S. dollar, the greenback, is what we call fiat currency. It is based on faith, because a dollar, a piece of paper that says $1, e pluribus unum, with a pyramid and an eye on it, that it has no intrinsic value. But we have faith that it's backed by the good, full faith and credit of the United States government. In fact, you know, I mean, as we've seen with other governments, there's no guarantee to the value of the dollar, but we trust, you know, if... We're America. Our dollar's got to be worth something. So that's called a fiat currency. The only difference between that and Bitcoin is it's, A, backed by a government, and a pretty good one, too. And B, there's a piece of paper you can hold in your hand. Bitcoin is backed by math. I'm pretty reliable. And but no government, and there's no piece of paper. There's no actual coin. In any event, one of the main Bitcoin developers, Mike Hearn, wrote a blog post in which he declared Bitcoin dead. He said, it's controlled by Chinese Bitcoin miners at this point. The community around Bitcoin is fractious. The big name Bitcoin exchanges have gone under because of fraud. He says, it's over. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take your calls next. Hello there, Heather Hammond, phone ranger.
I feel like I got dropped into the middle of an EDM party.
Here comes the bass. No, maybe there's no bass. It was a faux dubstep.
So faked out. Seriously.
It's appropriate, though, to play EDM electronic dance music because it's made by computers. So that's appropriate for the show. Anything made by computers we could talk about, which is pretty much everything. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is answering your call at 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Hello, Heather.
Good morning.
What you've been lining up all morning for the last 20 minutes. Great callers, and I would love to take one right now. Do you have a favored caller?
I do. I'm not going to tell you why. But anyway, Mark in Brooklyn from Brooklyn, Ontario, Canada.
I just like the name, Brooklyn, Ontario, Canada. What line would that be? There it is. Three. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Leo. Wow. I feel so honored to speak to you.
Oh, that's silly. But thank you. I am wearing the president's fitness band, so.
Well, that's another good reason.
Yeah.
Okay. I have so many questions for you. I wish I just had an hour of your time, but well, I know that's not possible.
I usually take a long time per call, so go ahead. All the other people
I have a very important one.
Yes.
I have a 16-year-old daughter who bought herself a laptop two years ago, Windows 8.
How enterprising of her.
Yes. Well, with help of her mom and dad, of course. But so now we upgraded it to Windows 10, and it was working fine. And then about 2 weeks ago, the keyboard and mouse just stopped working. Unless we plug one in, then it works. But the ones that are actually attached to, like, the mouse pad and the keypad do not work.
Yeah.
So we tried wiping it out completely and reinstalling Windows 10 and hoping that would solve it, and still no results.
Oh. That sounds like a hardware failure. You did the right thing. You know, when you're troubleshooting stuff, you always start with the easiest stuff first. And, of course...
Formatting the hard drive is the easiest.
No. You actually did the first thing you did was the really good one, which was try a external keyboard and mouse, and those work. That kind of right there tells you, the problem isn't the software or the operating system, but just to be sure you refresh the operating system. And that still didn't work. And, that's kind of predictable because an external mouse and keyboard did work.
Right.
So now we got to think that there's some hardware flaw in the trackpad and the keyboard. It could have been a USB issue, but by reinstalling the operating system, I think you pretty much guaranteed. Have you looked in the device manager? That is one thing you could do. You press Windows key X, select device manager, and just see if there's any red X's around devices that might apply to the trackpad and the keyboard.
Okay, I'll try that.
Could be the driver, but by formatting the drive, you've put a new driver on there.
Right.
But it'll show up. If there's a driver issue, it'll show up in the device manager. That's where that's where that shows up. I don't think it is. It's out of warranty?
It's 2 years old.
Yeah, probably out of warranty.
I feel bad for her. Now she's going to have to bring around a keyboard and a mouse.
Yeah, that's kind of sad. Although they make, portable keyboards with trackpads on them. I mean, they make solutions that might work, but it might be an easy repair. Whose computer?
It's an Acer Aspire.
You could call Acer and you could say, here's what's going on. You could even Google, Acer Aspire model number failure keyboard trackpad, something like that. And, you know, it may be a part that you could buy on eBay and unscrew the thing. Laptops are notoriously finicky about taking them apart. They're kind of like pocket watches. Have you ever taken apart a pocket watch? I did when I was a kid. And you loosen the last screw and everything goes boing. And then it never fits in exactly right again. And the laptop, similarly.
Just loosen the parts out. It's fine.
Boing. Yeah, I don't know where the screw goes. It probably doesn't need it. What's this spring? But so it's kind of like that. Just take it up. You may find online video and documentation. Nowadays, pretty much everything is online. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. I tried YouTube and I watched this video and the guy said, install this program. I can't remember what it is now. And it will check the drivers. And it said, yeah, there was an issue with the trackpad driver. So I updated it. Still nothing. So that's when we resorted to formatting.
And it failed in Windows 8, but you tried it with Windows 10. So you've tried it with both versions.
No, it worked with Windows 8.
Oh.
We upgraded to 10.
Oh.
It was fine, and then all of a sudden it just stopped.
Oh, you might try going back to Windows 8. You still got a Windows 8 disk around?
I don't think it came with one, actually.
It isn't unusual for there to be Windows 10 issues with trackpads. I've heard this before.
Well, my laptop, I can't use two monitors with it, and I upgraded to 10, and it's and that's one thing that's really frustrating, so I'm going to have to
either... The fact that you can use an external mouse and keyboard merely means the USB drivers are working. The driver for the internal keyboard and trackpad may be different. There probably was, especially for the trackpad, an Acer-specific driver, a Synaptics driver or something like that, that Microsoft wipes and replaces with its own, which may not work so well.
Right.
So okay. It could very well. Now that I understand, I thought for some reason that it failed under 8 and you put 10 on it. It's been 10 all along that's been the problem.
Right.
Although it did, as you say, worked a little bit.
Yeah. Right. That's when the issue started.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's hard. I wouldn't bet my life on it being a hardware issue. It sounds likely to be a hardware issue, but the 10 thing could be an issue.
I'll do some more research on that. If I have to, I'll call Acer and see if they can.
Yeah, and maybe go on the Acer site and make sure you have Windows 10 drivers for that hardware. If they have Windows 10 drivers for that hardware, I'd check it out.
Okay. Right. One other quick question for you, if it's okay.
Yeah.
I originally put a Google Plus on my I unfortunately have an iPhone 5C that's only 16 gigs, which is like full to the max.
Yeah.
And I put Google Plus on it so I could put my pictures on it. And then when Google Photos came out, can I get rid of Google Plus or is there a benefit to keeping it?
Well, only if Google Plus is a social network, which was originally the thing copying your photos. They stripped that capability out of the social network. And unless you're part of the Google, unless you want to participate in Google Plus, delete that. But do keep photos. Yeah, keep Google Photos.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much.
I would look in that device manager. I'm wondering. Now I'm thinking it's a Windows 10, maybe related to Windows 10. You should also look and see if the rollback to Windows 8 is available. It sounds like you formatted the drive and installed 10, which might have wiped that out. This is one reason why you do want to wait for that invitation to upgrade to Windows 10, because that invitation, in theory, doesn't arrive unless all your hardware is compatible. And even then, Microsoft does have a compatibility checker that you can run to make sure it's compatible. You know, I like Windows 10. I think it's a massive improvement over Windows 8. I understand why your daughter would want to run it. But, maybe because this is where people call if they have problems. I hear a lot of Windows 10 issues. I do. You know, I like Windows 10. I haven't had problems with it, but I hear so many, I'm starting to think maybe it's not fully cooked, even though they've even already shipped the big update to it, what they call Threshold 2, the November update. So I don't know. 8888-ASK-LEO. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek, right after this. Yeah, for sure, get the Windows 10 drivers from Acer. See if they're there. OEM upgrade on Windows 10 is always a little bit issue. Could just be hardware, though. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek with the world's best laugh, is here. Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
How you doing? Good, thanks.
I am great. So, as usual, at this time on this fine weekend, we like to talk a little bit about home theater. You were at CES last week. You're finally home, relaxed. Your feet have recovered.
Yep, they have. After 26 miles.
That's what I was going to ask. That's a good mileage total.
Yep, 26 miles from Monday night to
Did you wear the president's fitness tracker when you were doing
No. Believe me, I'm old school. I actually had an actual pedometer in my pocket.
Wow. Probably more accurate.
Hard to say. I don't know. I was thinking about trying one of these apps on the iPhone, but I didn't. Although I will next time.
You should do both and then compare.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. That's excellent. I'm always interested in accuracy in measurement, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that each of these things is a little different. Mm-hmm. Some of the smarter stuff, like the Apple Watch, I know, I laugh when I say smarter, but some of the smarter stuff, like the Apple Watch says for best accuracy, take a walk outside and measure it, because then it uses the GPS, compares it with your strides, actually calculates your stride size, and then is much more accurate, it says.
Right.
Indoors.
So it says.
It's true that little adjustment can make a difference in terms of its
true.
Count. Any event, that's not what you're here to talk about. You're here to talk about television, and I think you saw a little bit. One thing you wanted to talk about that we left out last week at CES was quantum dots. This is not something new, though.
It's not new, but it was newly pervasive at CES.
Last year...
It's a new backlighting technology, relatively new, for LCD TVs. And what it is instead of a white LED, which is what's now used as the backlight, as the light source in an LCD TV, they use blue LEDs and a film that is impregnated or embedded with what are called quantum dots. And these are tiny little spheres, like 2 to 7 nanometers in diameter, very, very tiny. This is a form of nanotechnology. And what they do is it's very interesting. It's a particular semiconductor material. And when this material gets bombarded with blue light, blue photons, they actually, the atoms absorb the blue photon and then re-emit another photon of a different color. And the color that is emitted by these quantum dots under the bombardment of blue light depends very precisely on the diameter of the quantum dot. And the quantum dot diameter can be very precisely controlled during manufacture. So if you get a slightly larger quantum dot, the color that it radiates will be red. If you get a little bit smaller one, it'll be green. You could even make a blue one, but you don't need to because you've got these blue LEDs producing blue light. So when you put a film of red and green quantum dots over blue LEDs, the result is the combination of red, green, and blue, or white. Now, the really cool thing about quantum dots is that they can be made, the spectrum of their radiation is very narrow. It's not quite laser-like, but it's getting there. Certainly much closer than a white LED. So if you take the spectrum of a quantum dot radiation, you can see that there are very clearly defined spikes at red and green. And you can tune those to be whatever you want. The bottom line is, this is what's going to get LCD TVs very close to the fabled color gamut called BT2020, which is the color the range of colors that is now specified for Ultra HD TV and for Ultra HD TV content. There are very few displays that can actually reach it, but the best hope for cost-effective displays, anyway, is this technology called quantum dots. And we saw it all over CES. It was really quite amazing.
So white LEDs have, I mean, white means you have every color available to you.
Right.
But it would be better if you could have red, green, and blue LEDs and turn them on appropriately. And that's what this effectively gives you.
It's sort of that, yes. There were some companies, Sony did it for a while. There must have been at least one other, where they did do red, green, and blue separate LEDs clustered together. And you could adjust them separately.
Yeah.
But that's very expensive.
So
very
this,
expensive.
This gives you, for a lower cost, an easier thing to manufacture, something similar.
Yep. Wow. Yep, exactly right. And also, though, it gives you a stronger red and a stronger green than you get from a white LED. If you take a look at the spectrum, if you measure the spectrum of a white LED, you get a strong blue and then kind of much weaker green and red, and they're very spread out, so they're very wide. Whereas with quantum dots, you get a very strong and well-defined green and a well-defined red and very strong, and so you have a much. It also allows for a brighter signal, which is important for this high dynamic range that I've talked about.
The Wikipedia article for quantum dots says, this article may be too technical for most readers to understand.
Yeah, well, I'm a home theater geek.
But we can bring it down to normal comprehension by merely saying it's going to give you a more accurate color.
More accurate color, much greater range of color, and a brighter high end, a brighter peak brightness, all of which is critically important for ultra HD.
Did you see these displays? Were they appreciably brighter and more accurate?
Yep. Absolutely so.
UHD Premium, the new standard, does that include quantum dots?
It does not specifically, no.
But you could reach the UHD Premium standard with quantum
Correct.
Dots.
Correct. Exactly so. That's precisely why it's important.
So I'm making a list and checking it twice.
I was about to do
that. What I need, well, you do look like Santa. Of what you need if you're going to buy a new TV today. Number one, we decided last week, was UHD Premium.
Premium.
And right. Under no circumstance should you really buy a 4K anyway. That doesn't support that standard.
That does not support that standard. I mean, right? Yes. Up till now, I've been sort of saying many times on this show, you should wait and buy a UHD or 4K TV after we have some things settled. Well, now we have those things settled.
Right. HDR is included. A broader color range is included.
Yep.
And,
yep,
of course, 4K. Yep. Now, I would say that's like 80 or 90% must have. You know, there's exceptions, but if you're going to get a 4K, so I'm going to say, if my new 4K TV, number one, UHD Premium. Number two, is quantum dots something in there?
Yes.
Is it much more expensive?
Yeah, they tend to be, although the less expensive Chinese brands have embraced it greatly, Hisense and TCL in particular.
Uh-huh.
And even Philips. Remember Philips TVs?
Yes.
We saw Philips TVs at CES, the high-end one with quantum dot.
Is it the same Dutch company, Philips NV, or is it they licensed the name out to some Chinese company?
Believe it or not, it's a Japanese company.
That's good.
Funai.
Well, Funai has been around for a while.
For a long time. And I actually thought it was Chinese as well, but it's not. It's Japanese.
Okay.
So they brought out the Philips 8600, 65-inch for like $2,700.
Okay.
And so it uses quantum.
Sounds like quantum dots I should look for. It doesn't mean it's going to be outrageously expensive.
No, it
doesn't.
It
may be not number one, but it could be on the list, number two. We're slowly building up my 4K list. Scott now, Wilkinson, we're out of time. Nope, stop.
Nope, sorry.
This article may be too difficult to understand for some readers. Scott Wilkinson is a home theater geek. He's podcast at twit.tv/HTG. Now we can go on. Now, the new Samsung, according to this guy, Web909, which is one after 910, the new Samsung UBD 8500 Blu-ray playing HDR Blu-ray discs will be incompatible with existing pre-HDR 2015 4K TVs due to HDCP 2.2.
Well, HDCP 2.2, let's see where
it is. Is that even out? Can I buy an HDCP 2.2 anything?
Yes. Oh, sure.
Oh, I can.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Receivers have it. TVs have it.
All right. So that's number three. Mm. HDCP. What's the current, the highest number? 2.2?
2.2.
So I want 2.2. That's actually a must.
That is a must. That is absolutely a must.
But presumably any 4K TV would not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It would be, you definitely want a TV that has HDCP 2.2 on its HDMI input.
Yes.
That's the key.
Because otherwise you won't be able to use these new Blu-ray players.
Exactly.
That's good. Good point.
Yep.
What else am I looking for? We got a good list here. UHD Premium number one. I'm going to say, does UHD Premium, it must specify HDCP 2.2.
I'm sure it does.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look, but it would be shocking if it
shocking.
Didn't. I'm sure. Shocking, I
shocking.
Tell you. Yeah, no, it has to. I'm must. Sure it does. It supports a high dynamic range.
HDR.
It requires the open standard, colloquially called HDR 10. And you could also have Dolby Vision in there if you wanted. Interestingly, Dolby Vision, high dynamic range, does not require HDCP 2.2. Now it doesn't require HDMI 2.0A. Now we're getting into serious alphabet soup here. But it does not require that the TV be able to recognize HDR metadata. Whereas the open standard, it does. And that would be the thing to make sure you have anyway. So any TV that's HDR compatible, high dynamic range compatible, will be compatible with, well, that's not entirely true. I was going to say with HDR 10, but Vizio is a notable exception.
I don't see any spec on this for HDCP 2.2. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I do too.
HDCP or HDMI, I should say HDMI, right?
Well, HDMI 2.0A is the latest HDMI, and that's what you need for I think that's what you need for HDCP 2.2. Mike Heiss in the chat room may set me straight on this. He's Mr. HDMI for sure.
I don't see anybody. Now, given all the companies that these are content companies in many cases, they must that must include HDCP 2.2, but it doesn't say anything.
Well, content companies, yeah, they have to support it, and they will support it. They want to support it because it protects them supposedly from, right.
No, fever. I know they support it. I would think that given that they are on the UHD Alliance, that they would specify the 2.2 HDCP.
Yep, I'm sure that's true.
But maybe they don't. They're not putting it in the press release.
Yeah, Mike Heiss in the chat room is saying that the HDMI, this is another thing that's actually difficult to determine when you're making a list of what your TV should be able to do, or the features that it has, that HDMI 2.0 or 2.0A can actually have two different clock speeds.
UHD Alliance.
I know.
Do you want to stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure, happy to.
All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We didn't even get to this HDMI, HDCP thing. We kind of touched on it with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. But he says you want to make sure that if you're buying a new TV, it supports HDMI 2.0A, and that will include this new copy protection standard, HDCP 2.2. And if you expect to use 4K disc players, you're going to have to support that. Any new set with 2.0 or 2.0A, 2.02, wait a minute, I don't know. It's too complicated. 2.02.0A will have HDCP 2.2. See why? This is why, by the way, TV guys, are you listening? This is why you're going out of business. Thank you very much. Unbelievable. 8888 Ask Leo. Oh, well, so you got to have. And the problem is, it really opens the door for unscrupulous salespeople to get you.
Well, you'd also got to have these gold plated HDCP 2.2 cables that'll cost you $180. That's very important.
Because the more confusing it is for consumers, the easier they can take advantage of you, right? Peter, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Peter.
What about my 1956 Philco?
It will not. Will not support the new 4K standard. I can almost guarantee. But I Love Lucy will look great on it.
Yeah.
Actually, that's true, by the way. I Love Lucy and the Honeymooners look better on that old Philco than they do on modern TVs.
It probably.
No, they do, because it smears the low but you can see all of the errors, all the flaws in it if you look at it on a really fancy monitor. But on an old TV, it's all smeary and it looks great.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know. Okay. What I called about is I've got a Nexus 6, and yes. I love the thing.
Giant phone.
Yeah.
It was so big that the code name for this with Google was Shamu. The killer whale. I'm not joking. Shamu. Okay, you have a Shamu.
I do. And I'm waiting for it to be updated to Marshmallow.
It's not been updated?
No, it's an unlocked phone, and it's not, you know, not any carrier. In fact, I got it running on Google Fi, but it hasn't been updated yet. Not over the air, anyway.
What? Yeah, I mean, Cyanogen has it, you know, these third parties. Wow. So one of the things that happens with Google Fi, which is Google's own cell network, they're combining Wi-Fi, Sprint, and T-Mobile into this unique setup, and you have to run a Nexus device to use it, including the Nexus 6, is you get a special, generally when you put the Fi SIM in, your phone will wake up and download a new specialized ROM for it. That may be what's holding it up. I don't know. I have one at home, replaced it with the 6P. I'll tell you this. Don't worry so much because Marshmallow is only the biggest difference in Marshmallow. You might notice better battery life because of this new Doze feature. There is Now on Tap, which allows you to tap any screen, and Google Now will look up information from that screen. I've never used it. It's not that useful. Let's see. Android Marshmallow updates. Nexus 6. I'm sure that Google, you know, one of the promises of the Nexus standard is that Google will update them. Keep them updated.
Yeah, I know my Nexus 9's already at 6.01. Yeah.
T-Mobile Nexus 6s began receiving the Marshmallow update last month. But you're not on any carrier. You're on Fi. You should get it before anyone does.
That's what
anyone.
I thought.
Well, that is very odd. You should have 6.0.1 on there. You can certainly do it. There are factory images out there. You could install or have been since October. I'm not sure what the holdup is. Let's see. Android 6 Marshmallow OTAs. That's the over-the-air update. That's what you're waiting for. For the Shamu. Yeah, they're out. They've been out since October. I don't know why it hasn't been pushed to you. I wish there was some way, some button, some menu item that you could say, force the update.
Yeah, I keep checking. You know, You can check in the settings.
A lot of times they do these rolling updates. You'll get it. You'll get it. I don't know why you haven't gotten it, but you'll get it.
Mostly I'm waiting for the feature of making the phone silent instead of just vibration.
Do not disturb.
Yeah.
Don't bug me, phone. Well, you know, I'll check around. They're rolling. They do staged rollouts. It's been out. It's been available since October. And apparently, I'm looking at the chat room. Some people have it. You can force it. You could look for the stock. What you want is a stock Nexus 6 Android 6 update. And you could force it. You'd have to root your phone, and then you could put it on there. If you could be patient, I would guess in the next month you'll get it.
Okay.
I am sorry. I'm going to check my sources at Google and say, what the what? Because that's the whole point of buying. That's why people buy a Nexus phone, is for the updates. Garst in our chat room said he tried to do this side load, this do-it-yourself. He says, I had a horrible time getting 6 on my Moto Nexus 6. It would download, not install. I had to go to recovery, use ADB, manual install it. Oy. But that's on a Motorola. Oh, no, that's the same one, the Motorola Nexus 6. That's it. If you want to do this yourself, you can. You can go. The key is to go to the site, XDA Developers site, where all will be made known. This is a wonderful forum for enthusiasts that has everything you need to know. If you go to forum.xda.developers.com, and we'll put a link in the show notes. Search for your exact model, the unlocked, uncarrier attached Nexus 6. Instructions on how to do this will be there. And if you're really impatient, you could do it. I would wait another few weeks. I'm stunned that it hasn't happened yet. But sometimes that happens. Always back up before you do it. Another reason you want to get to 6 is the monthly updates, which we now are getting pretty consistently from Google. These are security updates that are very important. So that's actually maybe the best reason of all, isn't it? It's Paul in Tarzana. Hi, Paul. Leo LaPorte.
Leo.
Hello.
How are you? Yes, Leo.
I am well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I've got a Netgear cable modem router that has gone rogue.
Okay.
I am trying to access it, which I have before, from my iPad, and I'm using the http://192.168.0.1.
Yeah.
And I've also tried to use the router login.net.
Yeah.
And I've tried it from Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. From Chrome and Firefox.
The router's gone rogue. It won't respond. You can't log in. You can't change it.
You got it.
Yeah. Have you tried resetting the router? You'll have to change. Yeah. You have to re-enter all the settings. So you've pressed that button on the back and all of that, held it for 30 seconds.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So there is a hardware reset, and routers do go rogue. A router is a really cheap computer. That's really what it is. It's got a processor. It's got firmware. It's got memory. But it can get kerfluggered. And, you know, you've reset your phone, your laptop, your tablet. This is the same thing. So you're going to have to look it up. There's a little tiny button. You can depress it with a paperclip on the back. Generally, and I'm not sure on that particular Netgear, you power it down. You press the button with the paperclip, plug it in. You hold the paperclip for 30 seconds till the front starts blinking. Then it will be as it came from the factory. Then you should be able to get into it. You'll have to re-enter all your settings. But that's not a bad way. I do that fairly frequently. I find routers like to be kicked once in a while. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy.
Hey, everybody. So glad to be back from CES. I had a great time. Big sports fan asked if I had a good time, and yes, I did. But it was pretty grueling. And after having walked 26 miles, I was glad to be home for sure. Been talking to a Toilet Bug about rear projection screens, and I must say I don't know that much about rear projection screens. I know that Stuart Film Screen makes something called Star Glass, which is really expensive and really cool, but he wants to do a Pico projector in a DJ booth, so I think color fidelity isn't the primary criterion there. So I just looked at, I just tried to Google rear projection screen material, and there's a ton of stuff out there. There's a YouTube thing, DIY rear projection screen, about $20. So there looks like there's a lot of resources out there for Toilet Bug. Web3494, is it true the bigger TV you get, the more blurry the picture will look? This is a very interesting question, actually. All other things being equal, the bigger screen you get, the more it will reveal any flaws in the input signal. That's one thing. Certainly the larger the screen, at some point, depending on how far you're sitting from it, you'll start to see the individual pixels if you get really close or if the screen gets really, really big. But that really isn't much of a problem. I mean, you go out to a commercial cinema and that screen is 30, 40 feet wide. And with a 2K image, which is typical these days, some theaters have 4K, but very often the content that is delivered to them is 2K. You don't see the pixels there, at least not unless you're in the front couple rows. So that's not too big of an issue. The biggest issue is that it will start revealing any problem at all much more. Ultimately, yes, it will perhaps start looking a little softer. I wouldn't call it blurry. I might say it softens it slightly a bit. The Sue the Writer. Yeah, I'm sorry I missed you at CES as well. That was, I was only there with 170,000 of my closest friends. So it was easy to miss some people. Creamy Corn Cob, how the heck do you wall mount that glass-backed LG panel that is only 0.1 or 0.2 inches thick? That's a good question. because there is a jack pack, as we call it, where all the connections are and the electronics. Like most very super thin TVs, OLEDs in particular, you know, that the main screen is only that super thin, but then there's this pack of electronics and stuff that's also there. I'm sure that they provide, he's asking about the glass-backed one in particular, where there is no mounting hardware on the back. It's just a solid piece of glass on the back. And how you wall mount that, honestly, I don't know. That's a great question, actually, because I don't see any way to do it. You'd have to do it from that electronics section. Or maybe kind of like
they'd
an
iPad.
They
put a Visa mount on the back of it, I'm sure.
There's nothing.
Well, there will be when they put it in the store.
I suppose. But yeah. At the show, you go walk around the back. It's a solid, flat piece of glass.
So it's on an easel then.
I was thinking about maybe some sort of, you know how iPad holders,
yeah,
you know, they kind of grip it on the corners.
Yeah.
You might be able to do something like that, but it'd have to be an awfully thin grip because there's almost no bezel around the screen.
Wow. They have an easel. Isn't that what Samsung did originally? They had the easel.
Yeah, they did. They did. So that's a possibility, too.
But it's because they lean back with an easel.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss a spot?
Lumpy is asking, when will networks broadcast 4K over the air? I think it's going to be at least 2 years. We did see examples of it at CES. LG had a live, what's called ATSC 3.0 broadcast in their booth. ATSC is the Advanced Television Systems Committee. And they are
remember,
the ones that...
Cable, like ESPN, is still 720p.
Well, but they chose that because it's progressive. It's P.
Right.
As opposed to 1080i. And progressive signaling is much better for sports. So right. That it makes no – it's not at all a surprise to me that ESPN chose 720p over 1080i because 1080i interlaced, you have a lot of fast action in sports. You know, a football flying through the air, basketball or whatever. And if you take the two interlaced fields – separately in time, one after the other in time, then the ball is going to get blurry. And so the ESPN and some other stations decided to go with 720p, even though it's a little bit lower pixel resolution, spatial resolution, it's higher temporal resolution. And so that's why they did that. But broadcasting 4K over the air, they're still talking about which audio standard to use in ATSC 3.0, which is the Ultra HD over-the-air broadcast standard. And so, you know, I don't think it's going to be for a couple of years. We're seeing technology demonstrations of it. I'm not holding my breath. Let's put it that way. UJ, are you as excited as I am to see what Sony can do with their backlight master drive? Oh, man, am I ever. And also what nano systems, you probably mean nanosys, can do to make nanocrystals or quantum dots emissive. Yes, we talked about this on Home Theater Geeks last Thursday. Both of these things, actually. The Sony Backlight Master Drive is extremely exciting. It is a backlight technology for LCD TVs, and it basically has, instead of hundreds of local dimming zones, it has thousands. They said over 1,000. I think it's more than that. I think it's in the several thousand range, but they wouldn't specify. Anyway, it basically makes a black and white image of the image that you're looking at in the backlight. And then that passes through the LCD layer with its color filters and becomes a full color image. In addition to being much more precise in its local dimming, it is also allows much brighter peak brightness. They were saying it was going to get to 4,000 nits. Now, most TVs these days, the Ultra HD premium specification specifies at least 1,000 nits. And the Sony Backlight Master Drive is talking about four times that amount. I saw a secret demo where they showed this at 4,000 nits, and it was almost painful. Now, there were fairly large portions of the screen that had this very, very bright image on it, but I was almost reaching for my sunglasses. So 4,000 nits, it's quite amazing. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it is the it's the way to make LCD even close to OLED in terms of picture quality. Now, OLED will never get to 4,000 nits. And there we go.
Thank you, Scotty. See you next
week.
My
pleasure.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smart watches, smartphones, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Out of that area, well, you just use Skype, and it shouldn't cost you a thing. Let's get back to the phones here. And Amy on the line from Huntington Beach, California. Hello, Amy. Oh, I got to push a button. Sorry, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
It doesn't happen automatically.
I have a Samsung Galaxy S3, and it's time to upgrade. But I wanted to upgrade to a phone that has the best camera.
Ah.
So one that can maybe work with low light or that can handle a certain amount of motion without the whole picture being blurry. So I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah. So the good news is that there are many cameras now, that phones now that have excellent cameras. In fact, most of the top-of-the-line phones from all manufacturers, Android or iOS, have very good cameras. Each has its own specialité. All of them would be better than your S3. We've come a long way, baby. In fact, the S6 is an excellent camera. And if you really wanted to stay with the Samsung Galaxy line, I think an S6 would be an excellent choice for you. The Note 5 is also very good if you wanted a stylus. But you mentioned something called low light. That is, and that's really probably more important than people realize. The low light doesn't mean pitch black, there's a candle burning. It means the inside. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with many cameras, and camera phones are really guilty of this, is they do their best to get low light. But what will happen is things will start looking blurry because they can't, you know, they have to slow the shutter speed down. So even if they can get an image, it might be blurry. And the image itself will be grainier and grainier as they, and that's the result of amplifying the signal that's coming back from the camera chip. There are a few things that help this. One is an absolute must, is OIS, or optical image stabilization. And some of the big cameras have this, camera phones have this, some of them don't. The idea being that it's kind of almost like the lens is on little springs, and the jiggle that you introduce from your hand, it's very hard to hold your hand steady when the shutter speed gets low, is compensated for by image stabilization. Now, that's not going to help if people are moving around. So if you're at a kid's birthday party and the kids are, and it's dark, or the kid's blowing out the candles on the cake and he's moving a lot, he's still going to be blurry. But at least it reduces any blur introduced by your hand not being perfectly still. So look for OIS. You want to look for a low number on the aperture, and this is a little harder to find out, but if you look at the review sites and so forth, the f-stops, some of the camera phones out there will do f1.8 or f2. The lower that number, the better it is in low light. Unfortunately, and then there's one third thing that impacts the low light performance, and that's the size of the microns, how many microns the dots are. So it's unfortunate because there are some cameras, I'm holding up, like you could see it on the radio, the Google's Nexus 6P, really big pixels, 1.5 microns. That's as big as it gets in a smartphone, but it lacks optical image stabilization. It's like, oh, you came so close. You were so close. I think you'd do very well with the, since you like Samsung?
Pretty much. I'm familiar with it at this point, and
right.
I use all the features of it.
Right. And the camera has a lot of features. I don't know if the S3 camera app has that many, but there's a lot of interesting features that people get dependent on that Samsung does, the sport mode and the inset, you know, selfie mode and stuff like that. If that's what you want, yeah, I think you might want to try the S6, which is a little bit smaller, or the Note 5. I'm trying to remember if the S6 – I know the Note 5 has optical image stabilization. But I don't know if the S6 does. The iPhone, for instance, in the iPhone world, the iPhone 6S does not. The iPhone 6S Plus does. OIS adds some size. Yes, there is OIS on the S6. So that's very good. Yeah. I would take the S6 camera is incredible. Just love it. Highly recommend it. And the Note 5, if you want a bigger screen, and it will be a lot bigger than your S3, and a stylus, if you want to kind of almost treat it like a small tablet.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your two choices. And I think both of those you'd be very happy with.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I think that, you know, for a long time, the iPhone was like just a given. This is the best camera out there. It's not the case anymore. Not the case anymore. I think that the iPhone has been matched. Some might say exceeded by the top of the line cameras from Samsung, for sure. From LG, the G4 has an excellent camera. It also has OIS. Its claim to fame is something called laser focusing, which supposedly is faster. I guess it's a little faster than phase detection or contrast detection. That's the techniques other cameras use. If you want a Windows phone, the new Microsoft Lumias, the 950 and 950 XL, excellent cameras, really good. Another thing that might help you with low light photography is a dual color flash. And that's something Apple invented, but now many phones have. Instead of just one bright LED light on the phone for its flash, they have two of them and they will white balance. They'll try to match the flash color to the color, the ambient color of the room. And while it's still a bad bright flash, it's better than it was. It doesn't look quite, you know, you don't quite look like a mugshot. You know, with a white flash and it's right next to the lens, people look, and the surprise people give you when they get flash photographed, they look like you're catching them in the act, frankly. And these newer flashes are a little less intrusive that way. What have I left out? Samsung, LG, Apple. The Google, very nice camera in terms of its accuracy on the Nexus 5X and the 6P, the top-of-the-line phones from Google. But the lack of OIS, I think, hurts them in low light, frankly. And that's fairly noticeable. You want optical image stabilization. What other brands am I missing? Motorola. Yeah, it's a decent. The Moto X is decent, not great. Sony's Xperia cameras are often cited by people as being fantastic cameras. In my experience, Xperia isn't all that great. It's nothing to write home about. And I think the design and the skin that Sony puts on them, unless you really want great battery life, that's their biggest claim to fame. I'd stay away from the Xperias. Have I covered everything? The good news is you can't really go too far wrong. All of the top-of-the-line phones now, and you'll pay a pretty penny for them, are pretty good. But, boy, I love the Galaxy S6. Now, I have the Edge, which is beautiful, but I think the Edge may be a kind of a failed design because you accidentally stroke the screen because you're holding it. You can't hold it without touching the screen, and sometimes you get spurious inputs. So unless you fall in love with the Edge, which I did, the design is beautiful, just get the regular S6. 8888 Ask Leo. Boy, that's more than you asked for, isn't it? That's a complete answer. If you want a complete answer or you want to put in your 2 cents worth, we can give you a way to do that for free. No sign-up required at the website techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. We have every show there. We do it show by show, day by day, hour by hour within the show, call by call within the hour. So you can drill right down to this call, the first call of the second hour, and read what the question was and what I said. We do that as quickly as we can. After the show, we'll end up putting audio and video there so you can listen or watch. And your comments are available. There's a little comment place which you can use freely. And that's nice because if you say, oh, you know, my favorite camera phone, I'd love to hear what your favorite camera phone is and why, maybe even a sample image or two. You can do that all at techguylabs.com. No sign up, no fee. I don't want your email address. We just want to make it a great resource for the community. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. Well, that's a great point, which is that many of these camera phones use Sony sensors, but the sensor almost is the least of it. Apple does so much post-processing. It's the software and what happens after the picture's taken, both in hardware and software, that is more important than the sensor. So the sensors are almost commoditized at this point. It's not just the sensor. It's the software processing. And some of that is becomes taste. I think the S6, for my taste, is the best because it's the crispest. Apple's sensor color reproduction might be the best. You know what's the best when it comes to data transfer? Widely agreed, fiber optic is the way to go. And that's why I want to tell you a little bit about Corning's new optical cables. You can literally upgrade your USB and your Thunderbolt from copper to fiber. And in doing so, you gain some real benefits. I want you to visit opticalcablesbycorning.com. You know, Corning, of course, is the name for glass. For fiber optics, for glass screens, Gorilla Ware, and all that stuff. But you gotta love these cables. Look at the knots they've tied in these cables. Optical cables are thinner, lighter, and can go farther than traditional copper cables. 50% thinner, 80% lighter. And the Corning optical cables have exceptional cable runs. 200 feet for Thunderbolt, 165 feet for USB 3. That means for a lot of applications, these are the best way to go. I love how robust these cables are. And they've got a little demo. I could do the demo for you, but I'll let you watch the video of this. You could tie these cables in knots. You can crimp these cables, and they still work. As I say, they takes a bending and keeps on sending. They are fantastic. Corning is, of course, very well known for fiber optics, and I love it. They're now doing consumer cables. In fact, I replaced all of my copper cables with the Corning fiber optic cables. USB 3-dot optical, Thunderbolt optical cables. You'll find them at opticalcablesbycorning.com. You can watch the videos there and learn more. These are awesome, awesome cables. I want you to take a look at them. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. I use them with my Drobo at home. And the other nice thing about these, because they have such long runs, you can put the hard drive, like that's the noisiest part of the computer these days. You can put it like far away. You can put it in a closet. It's awesome. Look at she's. You could send, takes a bending, and it keeps on sending. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That is the phone number. And Mike's on the line from Chula Vista, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
You know, I really like watching your radio show.
It's a strange thing to watch a radio show, but yeah, you I'm can.
I appreciate that you stream it on Twitter.
Yeah, we're not on any television network.
Yeah.
But you know, the internet, nowadays, who needs a television network? It's all on the internet.
Yeah, it's getting that way.
Yeah, Twit, if you want to watch, you can. Twit.tv is the website. What can I do for you, Mike?
Bluetooth. I just bought a Sony Bluetooth over-the-ear headphones. It has noise canceling, and it's wireless with Bluetooth. No, I want to find out how to use it on my TV, which is not Bluetooth.
So you'd like to like sit back and enjoy wireless sound on headphones from your television?
Yeah, I can also use it on my phone, sure. Cell phone, iPod, iPad.
Sure. So you can buy a Bluetooth transmitter that will convert audio into Bluetooth. And then you can pair up any headphones to it that you want. Now, a couple of things I'll mention. First of all, you don't want to use the phone headset for that because the quality of a Bluetooth phone headset is low because they know the phone quality is low. They don't bother to put high quality electronics in it. You want headphones that are designed for the higher quality Bluetooth audio. Sometimes you'll see it say A2DP. Bluetooth has a variety of profiles, and the high-quality audio one is A2DP, which stands for, not that it's of any use, Advanced Audio Distribution Profile, AADP.
Well, it has pretty good bass, though.
Okay, if it sounds good to you, then you can do that. The other issue is, of course, how do I get sound out of the TV? If your TV has a headphone jack, job done. You just plug the Bluetooth transmitter into the headphone jack of your TV, and then pair your headphones to the transmitter, and you can sit as far as 30 feet away
And, I've been looking at some transmitters on Amazon.
Yeah, they're cheap. They're all, you know what? There's no big brand name. You know, they're all cheap, made in China, and they all work about the same.
Some will plug into your optical output.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice. You could certainly do that.
Is that better?
So here, what it does is it kicks the can down the line, down the road. What, at some point, the bits in the television signal, the television signal is digital, and so that means the audio is in ones and zeros. Those ones and zeros have to be converted to analog sound for your headphones. Headphones only work with analog signals. So the only question is where the digital to analog conversion happens. Is it happening in the TV? If you're plugging into the headphone jack, it does, because the headphone jack is an analog jack. But now the disadvantage of that is Bluetooth is digital. So you're taking the television's converted analog audio, reconverting it to bits, and then in the headphones, converting it back to analog. So I guess in the sense that you're only going to convert it once, it's going to be digital all the way to the headphones. That might be better. You may not be able to tell the difference. I probably couldn't.
And what about delay with Bluetooth? I heard there can be a delay.
Yeah, and digital will be better for that. That actually is one argument for digital, is let's get rid of as much delay as possible. If there is delay, on some TVs, you can adjust it. The reason there's delay is because, in this case, you're taking the audio that's matched to the video and sending it, and the process of converting it and sending it might slow it down by a few milliseconds. And our brains are very well tuned to lip sync. Even a few milliseconds off, and your brain goes, hey, something's wrong. In fact, people get used to it. Satellite boxes, satellite TV like DirecTV and Dish have some delay sometimes, and people just get used to it. But you're right. You'd like to compensate for it. Modern TVs often have a compensating factor you can add. So do AV receivers. And your Bluetooth transmitter could conceivably, although I've never seen that.
You have time for a short question?
Sure.
When I use Chromecast to watch your TV, watch your show.
Yeah.
I get a lot of freezing. But if I watch it on my computer or directly off of twit.tv, it's okay. Why does Chromecast do that?
It all comes down to bandwidth. So freezing is merely that the signal, and we sent a pretty high-quality signal out, is faster than the bandwidth available to the device. And so the freezing is catching up. Like, oh wait a minute, I'm missing some stuff. Let's catch up. Sometimes you see it'll say buffering. Chromecast doesn't say buffering. It just might freeze. So for some reason, Chromecast is using your Wi-Fi network. It may be choosing a higher quality signal. So if you do notice stuttering or freezing in any video signal, choose a lower quality video. Don't watch HD. Watch 480p or 720p. Don't choose 1080p. In other words, lower the quality. You may not notice any degradation in quality, but you might notice less hesitation and stuttering. And it may be that the Chromecast, for some reason, is picking a higher quality signal than it can keep up with. That can happen. It can go the other way, too. People can sometimes say, oh, you look better on Chromecast. I watch it on the computer, and it's not as good. You can watch us on Roku. You can watch us on a website. You can Chromecast. If you're doing it via Chromecast from an app, that's different than if you're doing it from Chromecast from a laptop. So let's say you're watching it on a laptop in Google's Chrome. Chrome has the ability to send it via Chromecast to your TV. That's going to introduce some lag, some slowdowns, because it has to get it, convert it, send it out. And there may be so much processing going on that's why that's happening. There's no solution except to watch a lower quality signal and see if that gets better. Send out less bits. Can't keep up with the amount of bits. But I'm glad you watch. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Julia, Milwaukee, Oregon.
Hi, Leo.
What's the beer that made Milwaukee, Oregon famous?
The beer?
No, I'm sorry. That's a bad joke.
But there must be one, because there is a lot of beer in Oregon.
I know, right.
And I'm new to Oregon. I'm from California, and I moved up here because of my daughter. So here I am.
And how do you like it? Are you enjoying it?
I love it. I've been here 3 years, and I do love it. But I'm a California girl.
So I'm figuring that Milwaukee, Oregon was founded by some transplants from Wisconsin. That's all I can think of.
I think so.
Oh, it's the Dogwood City of the West. You're famous for your dogwoods.
Yes. Yes. It's nice. So beautiful. I mean, I do like it. And I do like the rain, so I'm fine.
You're in good shape.
I am, yeah. I'm about maybe 10 miles from downtown Portland, so pretty close to Portland.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. So what can I do for you today?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been trying to get back to 7. I have an Acer Aspire.
And you upgraded to 10?
I did, and I don't like it.
I don't like it. All right. I have to take a break, but if you can hang on, I will walk you through it. There's a couple of ways to do it. One easy, and that's the one that lasts for 30 days. There is an option in the first 30 days.
I can't do that one.
Can't do it? Yeah. No. So that means now you have to find the discs that came with your Acer, or if you don't have them, and you have to contact Acer and get them.
Well, I made the recovery.
Oh, hold on. I got a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett is our traveling man. He goes around the world and helps us each week travel better with technology, or TBT. And Johnny, where are you now?
This week I'm in the Cayman Islands. I turned off my video, by the way, since
that's fine,
to save some bandwidth.
Who wants to see any sun-filled, palm tree-lined picture from the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in the Cayman Islands? Not me!
Yeah, you got to come check out the Cayman Cookout. It's all the big chefs, Anthony Bourdain's. You know, they're serving food, they're cooking food, they're taking photos, they're hanging out.
And we're not going to keep you very long because I understand you're missing Anthony Bourdain's cookout right now.
True, but I just came from one of the island beach parties. And, you know, this is a lot of fun. Jose Andreas, Michael Mina, Eric Rapoport.
So, okay, rub it in. Go ahead, just rub it in. Meanwhile, let's travel better with technology. You got some pics.
Gotcha. So I got an app that just launched this week.
Yes.
You're going to like this one.
Okay.
It's called Seat-Eroo. So S-E-A-T, E-R-O-O.
Now, I know Seat Guru. What is Seat-Eroo?
Well, Seat Guru is much better, but Seat-Eroo is for someone, it's a new idea. So let's say you get stuck in a middle seat and you're trying to change your seat every different way and it will not work.
Yeah.
So this is a good option where you can, you know, you can download the app for free. You put in your flight number and, you know, if you're willing to pay for another seat and someone else who has a good seat can say, hey, I want to make some money.
Oh.
So they can put their seat up. You know, their exit row aisle.
Mispronouncing this. Is this seat? It sounds like you should say Seat-Eroo.
Seat-Eroo.
Seat-Eroo. Seat-Eroo. So actually can auction off your seat?
Yeah, it just came out. It's from some Southern California creators.
I get it. They got a little kangaroo mascot.
They take 15% of the seller's price.
So it's like seat
hopping.
That's how they make money. The idea is it's hopping from seat to seat. Now, how do the airlines feel about this?
That's what I'm waiting to hear. But, you know, I like the concept. I just don't know how it's going to work because, you know, you have to have a lot of people on there and the chances of someone else putting their seat on the flight that you want, especially in the beginning, obviously, is going
to
be.
So everybody needs to sign up right now. Now, the cool thing is you can do this after you get on. You can say, I don't want to sit next to this person. Maybe I can buy a better seat.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you have to do the swapping before you get on.
Oh.
And and then you pay the money, and the minimum is $5 that you could pay, but I don't think anyone's going to sell their seat for their $5. So it's more like $50 at least. And but they hold Seat-Eroo holds the money for 24 hours until after the flight to make sure that it all went smooth and you don't get ripped off.
It says they have a post boarding feature.
Oh, they do. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. I haven't tried it. I'm actually going to use it for my flight tomorrow.
The post boarding tool. You may not know where or who you'll be sitting near. Use Seat-Eroo to escape to a better seat. Wow, I love it. Okay, well, we'll see how the airlines feel about this.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So now I got a website for you.
Okay.
This one you might like, bringfido.com. So B-R-I-N-G-F-I-D-O.com.
Yeah.
And so Bring Fido is for anyone who has a dog and they're looking for a pet-friendly hotel, and it's not the easiest thing to find. So you can go to this website. It has 25,000 hotels in 150 different countries worldwide. And so it's – and not only hotels, by the way. It has B&Bs, vacation rentals, and campgrounds.
And it also has calendars for dog events and all sorts of stuff. This looks great. If you're a dog lover, Bring Fido.
And yeah, I'm a dog lover, but I don't have a dog because I travel too much. But my cousin, Artie, who's a big fan of your show, they use this all the time. He's actually the one who turned me on to it.
There's actually a new website. Next week, we'll talk about bringartie.com. If you have a cousin named Artie, it'll find a place that Artie's allowed.
And I got a tip for you, by the way. So I was trying to do a travel tip. So, you know, a lot of people just take their boarding pass from the plane and they leave it in the seat pocket or they just throw it away. I always recommend keeping it. First of all, I keep mine as souvenirs. But another reason why you want to keep it is because, you know, if you ever don't get credit for your mileage, this way you can show proof. And also, now a report just came out saying that, you know, the barcode on the boarding pass carries a lot of personal information.
Whoopsies.
And there's apps out there that will read it.
Whoopsies.
And, yeah, and I see my friends all the time posting their boarding passes on Facebook and stuff saying, look, we're going to...
Put your thumb over the barcode. Put your thumb over the barcode.
And put your thumb over your confirmation number, your freaking flyer number.
Yeah, people. So, yeah, you don't know what bad guys are up to these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So bring your boarding pass. Don't post it on social media. Yeah. And
I posted a ticket once on social media, my Super Bowl tickets. And then I realized that's got the barcode on it. So I pulled it down and I was lucky. I didn't lose my seat, but I was really nervous for a little bit because I realized I posted my barcode.
I was reading last month about this girl in Australia who posted her winning ticket from the Melbourne Cup.
Right.
Like 100 odds or something.
And lost her money.
Yes. Someone scanned the ticket and... And cashed it in.
Dumb. You know, there's another good little scam. Somebody's already done this. You know, the TSA has those special locks that they can unlock, but nobody else can. Turns out it's the same key. Right. And somebody took a picture of the key, you know, some TSA guy holding the key. And you can go now and 3D print a TSA lock key.
I read that. But you know what? Also, the locks don't work on most, especially zippers, because all you got to do is take a pen.
I know.
Stick it into the middle thing and you slide it and they can open up the bag and then they just zip it again, even when it's locked.
And you can't tell it's been unlocked.
Yeah. So I try and put stuff. You can wrap your bag in this plastic wrap, which is, you know.
You ever see anybody do that? It's so great. Yeah. It's so crazy.
I've done it.
They have machines. It'll do it at some airports.
It's expensive too. They usually charge 10 euros. I try not to check bags, but if I have something valuable in there and I just cannot carry it on, then I would do something like that.
I know, speaking of bringing Fido, I notice a lot more companion animals on flights.
And that drives me nuts because, you know, most of them are, you know, they're not
chihuahuas. They're not. But the idea that how do you get – so you apply, you say, look, I'm a very nervous flyer, but it makes me better if I have my dog. Can I make this a companion animal and they get a special coat or something? I mean, I think there's some people. I met a big burly guy. I think he had a little PTSD from serving in the service in Afghanistan, and he had a little dog with him. And you know what? I did not begrudge him that. The dog was well-behaved.
Listen, there's so many people out there that really need it, but there's other people who are out there just trying to scam the system so they don't have to pay the $150 fee or whatever. So they go online, they get these certificates that say their dog is a service dog, which it's not. They're not trained. The dogs are going to the bathroom in the aisle. Last week, they actually had someone who had a wild turkey in the seat.
Service turkey?
That was their animal.
This is my companion turkey.
The turkey.
Okay, so, I haven't seen that.
I've heard about
holy cow
pigs, and now the holy turkey one. It's all over the internet.
Yeah, but I don't want to put down somebody who has a companion pet and has a, you know, the doctors prescribed it.
Without this doubt,
that's wonderful.
I have friends who need it,
and I've seen very well behaved. Well, you were fear of flying. Had they had such a thing in that day, you might have had a little bunny in your pocket. Who knows?
Sure, but I have a problem with people who are scamming it. So the people who really need
to scam it, that's right.
It's going to be a problem.
It is. It is a violation of federal law to use pretend you have a service dog. So, just be aware of that. Hey, thank you, Johnny Jett, Mr. Johnny Jett. You can find him at johnnyjett.com and wherever great cookouts are happening, even if it happens to be the Cayman Islands. Follow him on Instagram for great pictures. Go down and have some Bourdain food.
I'm going to. He's a good cook.
Oh, man, I'm jealous. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. Johnny, Jet. Woo! I'm going next year, man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You couldn't go anywhere on Facebook last week without seeing pictures of David Bowie, tributes to the late David Bowie. It's kind of neat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, and I have to apologize because we were talking to Julia in Milwaukee, Oregon, and we took a break for Johnny Jet's travel expertise, but Julia's still there. So, when we last talked, you don't like Windows 10. You want to go back to Windows 7, completely understandable, but you missed the deadline. You get 30 days to roll back, so you can't do that. Or did you try and it didn't work?
I tried it. And it didn't work.
Yeah,
and
that's happened to me, too.
I mean, I tried it previously.
Yeah, so. That's happened to me, too. So you said you made the recovery disks.
I did, because of you.
Good.
I know, but I don't know if I made them on the right one. It's the DVD plus R.
That's fine. That's what
I made. Okay, I made the and my question is I also have the backup drivers and applications.
Great.
And I don't know if I'm supposed, I don't know, do I start with that?
Or oh, good. This is an easy one. I can help you here. Now, remember, very important, in most cases, when you restore the system using those system recovery disks, by the way, nowadays, I recommend not doing it on a DVD. Just do it on a USB key. You could fit it all in one USB drive. It's smaller, more compact. It's easier to use.
Right.
But do you have a DVD player in your computer?
I do.
It's oh, good.
It's old.
Yeah, good. So it's old enough the reason people have moved to USB thumb drives is because a lot of devices no longer have optical disc players.
I know.
So for future, it's also faster and easier. And anyway, but you got it all on one DVD. That's good. And then the second DVD that includes the support. That's fantastic. As long as everything went, as long as it made it properly.
Well, I have like four recovery discs.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the other reason. You know, a DVD... In the old days, it was a big thing. It holds 4.7 gigabytes.
Right.
But you can get a USB key that holds, 64 gigabytes for $30. So nowadays, we just put it on USB. However, the thing I was starting to say but got sidetracked is in most cases, that's going to wipe off the hard drive. You're going to essentially make the computer the way it was when it came to you from the factory.
Mm-hmm, that's fine.
Yeah, make sure you've got backups of any data that you need.
Yes, I actually don't even have anything on it because I'm just, I just use it just to look in it. So
oh, great.
I don't have anything that's really important. So I just want to go back.
Wonderful. So this is, you're actually going to love this because it will be just like you got a new computer. It'll be as fast as it was the day you got it.
Okay.
So you start with the recovery disk. And that should be, if all went properly, bootable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of times a computer, when you... as it comes from the factory, doesn't boot a USB, won't boot a USB or a DVD. It'll just go right to the hard drive. So the first thing to do is put the disk in there, shut the machine down, turn it on, see if it loads the operating system from the disk. If it does, it'll start up a little program. It'll say, you're going to wipe everything. You want to do this? You go through this step by step. Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it'll put the new operating system on there. And then it, at one point, we'll ask for a second disk, a third disk, a fourth disk, and finally the driver's disk.
Mm-hmm.
If all goes well, when that process is done, you will have your computer will be brought back to the way it was when you bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's very important. You're going to get it online. Enter in your Wi-Fi password and go online, and immediately run Windows Update and continue to update until it's done, which may take several reboots.
Okay.
You want to do all of those critical updates until it says there are no more critical updates.
Okay.
Then you can use it.
Okay. Okay.
You don't want to use it until you got all those updates on there.
Okay. And another question, how about if it doesn't? Because I've actually tried this recovery disk number one, and it keeps just updating my 10 for some reason.
Ew. So you've put it in with Windows running.
Yes.
And it gave you some options?
It did.
It said, would you like to restart the machine and wipe the drive?
Well, I don't remember now.
It might have just been an update disk. So
I don't know what happened. I mean, I actually put in my disc, and it's, you know, it just doesn't seem to want to get me back to seven.
Yeah. It just, it really depends on the machine and the manufacturer. Try the reboot. So you're doing, which is the normal thing to do, by the way, put the disc in while Windows is running. Windows will load the disc and say, oh, and give you a menu of options. If that doesn't give you what you want, you might try the first thing I said, which was shut the machine down, put the disc in, and start it up.
Okay, shut the machine down.
Just turn it all the way off.
And then turn it on and then put my disc in?
No, put the disc in, then turn it on. So actually, put the disc in now.
Okay, and I
then,
have it in there.
Yeah, and then reboot the machine and see if it boots up to that disc and see if it gives you an option to wipe the disc, the hard drive, and start over.
Do you mean restart? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, restart.
Restart, okay. Yeah. Okay, then I shall try that. And
yeah, and look on the menu carefully because what you're looking for is language that will imply we're going to erase the disc and delete all your data and start over. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't boot to the DVD but goes right to your hard drive, then you need to change the boot order.
Yeah.
Usually that means you're going to just, while it's booting up, while the screen's black, before it starts Windows, you're going to tap the F12 key on most computers. Who made this computer?
Oh, it's the Acer.
Acer.
Mm-hmm.
It might be F10, it might be F12, but you're going to tap a key.
I think it's F10. Okay, F10.
Yeah, you're going to tap a key that'll let you change the boot order. Because you don't want to boot right to the hard drive. You want to first check to see if there's a disc in the DVD player.
Mm-hmm.
You may not need to do that.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
And if none of that works, then there's one more option, which is there's in Windows 10, there's a, by the way, this is so much easier in Windows 10. Going forward, mm-hmm. it'll be a lot easier. There is a system recovery control panel that you can run, and it'll give you many options, including recreate, you know, the system from the disks.
The Windows 7. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then I shall try that, and I appreciate your help so much. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Julia. Yeah, and you know what? Windows 7 is fine. It's going to be supported by Microsoft for years to come, I think till 2020. And it's a great operating system. It's what came with your computer. No reason not to use it. Really, one of the reasons I like Windows 10 and so many people seem to like Windows 10 is because it looks a lot more like Windows 7. We're back to the old days. That's the reason. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. And Lois has a very slow computer. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I'm sorry to bother you. I'm about as low-tech as you can get and still be erect.
Well, you're not bothering me because this is what I do for a living, so.
Well, it's such a simple question. My HP computer is so slow and it freezes frequently. I know it needs to be cleaned up. Yeah. Could you recommend some kind of a system I could use?
There's no cleaner that is worth it, and you'll see a lot of ads for exactly this problem.
I have.
And they're terrible. Don't use them.
Oh, well.
Yeah, the only way to fix a slow computer, best way anyway, is to do a spring cleaning, which is what I just described to Julia, which is starting over. If you have the disks your computer came with, you just boot to them and wipe the disk off and start over. Now, you'll want to back up your data first, okay?
Yes.
You know how to do that?
No.
Okay, well, you're going to hang on because I have to take a break for news, but don't go away.
Okay.
As soon as the news starts, I'm going to get on the phone with you, and we're going to walk you through it, okay?
Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on. Oh, Lois, I'm going to help you now. And no one's listening, just you and me.
Oh, good.
So you don't have to be embarrassed. So it's really slow. Now, the problem is these ads prey on people. Speed up your computer, fix your computer, because everybody wants some magic button they can do this.
Yes, I was hoping for one.
I wish there were, but most of the time this doesn't really do anything important. A lot of times, computers slow down for a number of reasons. Some of them, serious issues like viruses and things can slow your computer down. But also what can happen is, and this is most common, as the hard drive ages, it slows down. And the reason is it's not really slowing. It's not spinning slower. It's that parts of the hard drive get harder to read, and so your computer has to take more time to read the data off of it.
Okay.
So in both cases, in virus cases and in this case, you can often fix this by formatting the drive, erasing it entirely,
okay,
and starting over, putting your operating system back on it. That has another benefit, which is another thing that slows down computers is that over the years, and I'm guessing this is a fairly old computer.
Yes, it is.
Over the years, you add software, you add layers and layers, and this all gets bogged down by that stuff.
Yes.
So if you go back to the way it was when you got it, it will be as fast as the way it was when you got it, which was presumably fast.
Yeah.
And then it will begin again, that process of slowing down. So I do this every year. And you haven't done it in how many years?
Ever.
Ever. How old is the computer?
About 5 years.
Yeah, it's time. It's time. Now, it may be this doesn't speed things up, in which case your hard drive is kind of out of shape. And either a new computer or, cheaper, a new hard drive would probably fix this problem. And you could, you always have the option, if this is scary for you, of bringing it to a shop,
mm-hmm,
if you could find a good one, and saying, please reinstall Windows. It's Windows 7?
Yes, it is.
Please reinstall and you know, back up my drive and reinstall Windows 7. Would you do that, please?
Okay.
They may say to you, oh, well, lady, I could speed it up without doing that. Don't. You want to really wipe the drive. Really, the best thing to do for this is to erase the drive, put a fresh copy of Windows on it. Now, who made the computer?
HP.
Okay. That's right. You said that. Did the computer come with disks?
You know, my daughter-in-law installed it for me, and I don't know, but I will certainly.
If you still have the boxes or,
yes,
you know, ask the daughter-in-law. Most computers nowadays do not, but computers 5 years ago might have come with what they call recovery disks.
Okay.
If you have recovery disks, that's the simplest, best way to do this.
Okay.
Because an HP wants you to have them, as most computer companies do, because if you call them and say, my computer's slow, the first thing they're going to make you do is what is this, just erase everything and start over.
Yeah.
But really important that remember that when you erase everything, you're erasing everything you have on there, including any drawings or documents or email or anything.
Yes.
So you got to save that stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
That may be even more of a challenge than fixing the thing. Do you know how to – you probably have never done a backup, I'm guessing.
No, I haven't.
You are very lucky that you called me because you're at risk. If that hard drive is starting to age out, you're at risk of losing it. And then anything that's on there is gone forever.
Yeah.
So we don't want that to happen either. You know, if there is a Best Buy near you or a storefront in your town where, I'm sure in Denver there is.
Oh, indeed.
There's a person, you know, computer help guy.
What about like the Geek Squad?
Yeah, that's Best Buy, the Geek Squad. They're not my first choice because the degree of training they have varies. You'd be better off if there's some guy who's been doing this for years. He's probably a heavy smoker. He also fixes VCRs and TV sets.
Vacuum cleaners.
You know what I'm saying? Vacuum cleaners.
Yes,
but he's a geek. He's a geek. And you bring it in, he'll know exactly what I'm talking. He'll do exactly what I just said. Say, I don't want it cleaned up. I want you to format the drive and put a new operating system on there and restore my data.
Okay. I think I do know a guy who could do that.
That would be the best rather than you trying it. I don't want you to lose your data. So you really want to emphasize to him, there's stuff on here I don't want to lose. Please don't kill my data. But I really think that either the hard drive's dying or I just need a reinstall.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. And I appreciate your help. You've saved me a problem because I was so tempted to use one of those services.
All it really does is add another layer of slowdown, frankly, for $50. You're out your money and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Okay, I really appreciate it, Leo. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lois. Great to talk to you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. I always say the same thing. I know. But, you know, I got to tell you that, right? 888-827-5536. Anywhere from the U.S. or Canada. Toll free. I'm going to say something now I've never said before. Maybe I have. It's going to put me out of business. If you all listen to this advice, the following advice, I will be out of business. But it's worth it. We were talking just a minute ago to Lois. And by the way, off the air, I walked her through the process that she needed to go through. But Lois, like many of us, 5 years ago, bought a Windows 7 computer because she wanted to, you know, get on the internet. She wanted to do email. She wanted to write something or, you know, she wanted to use a computer. She wanted to join the 21st century, as many of us do. And 5 years ago, really, your only choice was Windows or Mac. That was it. You're going to buy a computer. It might be a laptop, might be a desktop. It's going to be Windows or Mac, and that's it. Well, times have changed, starting in 2010 with the release of the iPad, and then a couple of years later, Google released something called Chromebooks, and there suddenly we had choices. See, the thing that was really the problem was, for most of the personal computing era, the only thing you could buy was a hideously complex box that was way, way more than anybody or almost anybody needed. But, general purpose computer was about it. That was the choice. And most people really, what they do with a general purpose computer is surf the internet, send and receive email, maybe buy stuff on eBay, that kind of thing. But it's way more than you need because a general-purpose computer can also design rocket ships and calculate trajectories to the moon and edit major motion pictures. And you don't really need something that powerful or that complex. The problem is that was your only choice. It's like buying a Ferrari to go down to the grocery store. It's too much, but there just wasn't a choice. There is now, and that's the good news. But the problem is our thinking hasn't updated yet. Most people should not, and this is what's going to put me out of business. If you all did this, I'd be out of business. Most people should not buy a computer, a general purpose PC. You shouldn't. It's too much, too complicated. The security requirements alone are virtually undoable for most people. Now, there are people listening, many of you, who are geeks, who know, oh, no, I want that complexity. I'm going to write my own software. I am going to calculate trajectories to the moon. I do want to edit a major motion picture. You know who you are. You can ignore this advice because probably you're not going to call me asking for help when it doesn't work. But the truth is, 99% of the people who are buying computers don't need computers. They need something much simpler. Really, my first choice, and by the way, much less expensive, much less complicated, much more secure, much less prone to the kinds of failures general purpose computers are prone to. My first choice would be a Chromebook. And there are lots of good choices here. And they range in price from $150 to maybe $400. They're very inexpensive. Really, under the hood, they are full general-purpose computers. They're running, in fact, they're pretty fancy general-purpose computers running an operating system called Linux. But Google's designed these to hide all that complexity. They run Chrome OS, which is essentially just a browser. And you can only do with it the things you could do with the Chrome browser and its plugins, which is almost everything anybody really wants to do with a computer, including play games, not the high-end PC games, but fun games, answer and send email, banking, all of this stuff much more securely, buy things online, read your newspaper, all of the things most people want to do. Frankly, an iPad is also a good choice, a little more expensive. Without a real keyboard, it's also a little bit less capable. You know, I wouldn't want to write a novel on an iPad, but a Chromebook, perfect for writing a novel. Perfect. Chromebook does require a full-time internet connection. Most people have that, Wi-Fi or a coffee shop. You do need that. You can use them offline, but not for very long. You know, if you're getting on an airplane with a Chromebook, you download all your email. While you're on the plane, if the plane doesn't have Wi-Fi, you can answer email, but it won't get sent till you land. But you know what? Most planes have Wi-Fi now. Most everywhere has Wi-Fi. Internet access is not hard anymore. It's widespread. That's one of the things that's made these things possible. widespread internet access, fast processors that can hide complexity, and powerful operating systems that aren't general purpose but are specific to the needs that most people have. It's a mature industry now, and it's not a hobbyist industry anymore. But many of you, like Lois, are buying a product designed for hobbyists, frankly, designed for people who want to mess around with it and who don't have a problem when the hard drive slows down of pulling it out, reformatting it, installing a new operating system on it, putting it back, and all those kinds of things. That's easy. Oh, yeah, I can do that. If you're that person, you know you are, and you don't need to listen to my advice. But for the Loises of the world, for most people, you're really overbuying. You're spending more money. There's more complexity, and there's security issues that come up. There's no securities with the Chromebook. You know, the beauty part of the Chromebook is most of your data is stored in Google's cloud. So if your Chromebook gets slow, my advice is much simpler. Oh, yeah, power wash it. There's a setting. You press a button. It says power wash. The thing reboots, and it comes back fresh as a daisy, ready to go again, with all security potential flaws, issues gone, fixed. And because your data wasn't on the Chromebook in the first place, but stored in Google's cloud, it's all still available to you. By the way, I don't have to sell you Carbonite because there's no backup you need to do. So I would encourage anybody. In fact, I probably should have told Lois, you can do this. Get that computer working, that HP Windows 7 box working again, or you can run down to the store. Buy a Samsung or Acer or Asus or Google Chromebook. Many manufacturers make them. They're the number one computing device on Amazon for good reason. They have them in desktop versions. They look like iMacs, you know, with a full 27-inch screen and all that. They have them in little tiny portable laptop versions, all kinds. And Dell makes a very good one now that's a little more expensive but has a higher quality. These are great. That really what most people need. So please consider that. And even a student, unless the student is a computer science or electrical engineering degree student, maybe in some of the sciences, unless the student really needs to do some heavy-duty stuff, a Chromebook's fine. In fact, I can do programming on my Chromebook. I can do video editing. I can do music editing. There's a lot I can do on a Chromebook. There's very little I can't do on a Chromebook day-to-day, even some of the heavy-duty geeky stuff. I can't play Fallout 4 on a Chromebook. If you're a gamer, yes, you need a PC. Chromebook is to a full-service computer like a Xbox is to a PC for the gamer. You know, most gamers, if you really like gaming, you should buy a PlayStation or an Xbox. It's a no-brainer. You don't have to think about it. You just play the game. When you're done, you turn it off. Really hardcore gamers want PCs. Okay, you want to spend thousands of dollars and learn the ins and outs of this, that's fine. You know, wear your Oculus Rift virtual reality goggles, that's fine. But really, we don't need the complexity. And by the way, a lot of people say, oh, just get a Mac. You know, a Mac is equally complex. Any general purpose computer has to be pretty complex so that it can handle any task thrown at it. So getting a Mac, you know, as much as Apple advertises, it just works, the computer for the rest of us, that's not true. It really isn't. An iPad, yeah. And, you know, if you have a smartphone, you're kind of used to that. But I think for most people, a Chromebook is such a good choice. And by the way, that's 180 degrees from my previous beliefs. But over the years, I've really come to see that's the way to go. And if you all do that, I'm out of a job, but I'll be happy about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Meanwhile, more of your calls right after this. Let me mention our sponsor for the podcast. Credit Karma is awesome. You've just made your New Year's resolutions. I know you may not make it to the gym every day. It's easy to take the necessary steps to get your finances in great shape. And it all begins with your credit score, checking your credit score. Most people don't know their credit score, and yet that's the most important number when it comes to buying a house, buying a car, just, you know, living a financial life. And the best place to do this, I know, you know, you've heard of those free places, is Credit Karma. Many of the websites that offer free credit reports are confusing and have hidden fees. Credit Karma does things differently. These are truly free credit reports with no strings attached and no credit card required. How could they charge you? They don't. Credit Karma doesn't just send you a score and sends you away either. They actually break it down so you can see how your actions, actually this has been so valuable for me, how your actions affect your score. For situations like when you use too much of your credit limit and your score goes down, things like that. It was really valuable for me. I became a Credit Karma customer a couple of years ago, and I use them religiously. I've got it on my phone, my iOS phone. Actually, I have it both on iOS and Android devices. And I'm not alone. 45 million members turn to Credit Karma to check their credit score. Visit creditkarma.com right now. Get your free credit report. You may not get to those ab crunches, but you can feel more confident about your finances this year. Get your finances beach ready. Your free credit report waits at creditkarma.com. And you see the alerts? That's handy, too. That's one of the reasons you want to put this on your phone, so you can see when your score goes up or down. Creditkarma.com. It's free. And we thank them so much for their support. You don't even have to give them a credit card. That makes it easy. Creditkarma.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. Adam is in Wethersfield, Connecticut. Hello, Adam.
Ooh, that's me.
Ooh, Mr. Cotter. Hey, Adam.
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm very happy that I purchased the iPhone battery case, because last time when I called, it just died.
I kept you on hold long enough that the battery died. That's shameful.
Yeah, that's an hour and a half.
I'm so sorry. Well, thank you for your patience.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm a huge fan of your show. I've been listening to you for years.
Thank you.
And I'm not going to say it sadly, but you have replaced my music collection, because I just added almost every single Twitch show to my podcast list. And
right on, Daddy-O! I love you!
Music.
I'm sorry, Adele, but, you know, he chose. You lose.
I chose.
Taylor Swift's crying right now, and her next song's going to be Breaking Up With Me. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I appreciate it.
No problem. So let's talk NAS.
NAS, man. NAS. Network Attached Storage.
Correct. I've been on
that. That really clarifies things, doesn't it? People are going, what's a NAS? Well, it's a network attached storage. Okay. What's a network attached storage?
Basically, slow.
So the idea of a NAS is actually a great idea, which is, although less, it's kind of your personal cloud. I think that's a good way to describe it. You have in your home or office a hard drive, big capacity storage unit that doesn't have it's a computer that doesn't have a screen or a mouse or a monitor. You get to it on your network using a browser, and then you can have it do things like back up your data or serve your video files, that kind of thing.
That's correct. And I'm going to say you are my biggest weakness. I watch your show and I get the stuff I don't need.
I know. I do, you know, and by the way, just so you know, I'm in the same boat. I end up buying all the stuff I recommend as well.
Well, also.
I'm broker than you as a result.
The good benefit is that you can always give in to your loved ones. That's Christmas.
I do. We have a very nice hand-me-down system here at the Twit Brickhouse Studios.
Absolutely. So let me tell you a bit of my setup. In 2015, I have changed a lot of my setup. I spoke a few times to Scott, so I got a JS8500 Samsung TV, 4K, great.
Scott will cost you more money than I will. Our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, he'll cost you a lot of money.
He mentioned once, so I got not just the Playboy, I got the Saab, a few satellites, and now I have in every room.
Oh, man.
And a few other things. Either way, in the center of my setup, I have currently a Plex server, and I have an Apple TV 4, and everything is running great. And I had a Synology NAS, which was great.
We like Synology. That's a very good brand.
Yes.
Synology. Okay.
Amazing in management. Speeds are okay depending on a setup. Of course, it died, and I did something stupid. I went and bought a Drobo.
Well, that's not necessarily stupid. It's just a different kind of thing.
I went with a DAS instead of a NAS.
It's a DAS, not a NAS.
I think over the years, I didn't actually learn a lesson that their Drobo software dashboard is just not the greatest way of managing
data. I love Drobos as a giant USB storage But generally, I don't recommend their NAS solutions as much as I do companies like Synology or Netgear, because I just find that they're more designed for that, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So what I had 6 terabytes of media, which I had offloaded some time ago to multiple hard drives. And you can imagine myself connecting to the back of the one single NAS, USB controller, and daisy chaining 16.
Well, let me, before we get all the details, what is it you're trying to do? What do you want to do?
I'm looking for a fast NAS, something that's going
to... A way to serve video or backup? What functions do you want?
Actually, for everything.
For everything.
Yes.
So the reason a NAS is slow is not the NAS itself as much as the fact that instead of being direct connected to your computer, it's connected via internet, in many cases Wi-Fi. So it'll be faster if you have an Ethernet network, faster still if you have a faster Ethernet network. You know, Ethernet networks started at 10 megabits, then they got to 100. Now they're routinely gigabit. And in fact, here in the studio, we have a 10 gigabit network that can transfer a gigabyte of data per second. That's obviously pretty fast. Fast enough to watch high-def movies and copy files around. Almost, it looks as fast as a local drive. But that's the reason it's slow, is not so much the software or the hardware in the NAS as the fact that you're doing this over a network. And I bet you're doing it over a Wi-Fi network, because almost everybody does that. Wi-Fi, no matter what numbers the Wi-Fi quotes, is not as fast as its top speed. It's usually about one half of its top speed. So your very, very quick math will show you that you shouldn't consider network-attached storage the same way you consider locally-attached storage. It's slow because it's on the network. So getting a better NAS isn't going to fix things up. If you want it to be faster, either get faster Wi-Fi, and the good news is 802.11ac is faster, so get a NAS that supports AC, a base station that supports AC, computers, you have to have AC everywhere to see the benefit, computers that support AC, and then things will be a little bit faster, or go hardwire. Now, a lot of people don't want to do that or can't do that because the whole point of a network-attached storage device is decentralization. You got computers everywhere, data floating throughout the house. Most of the time, I would just live with the fact that network-attached storage is slower and not try to do the same things you would do with a locally attached hard drive. That's why backup is a good choice, because that can happen kind of in the background over time, maybe overnight. It has to be fast enough if you want to use it as a media server, fast enough to play back a movie. But understand, if everybody's playing back different movies, they can't keep up. So, you know, a NAS, as it stands, is only as fast as the network it's on, period. Now, there are faster systems. That's where SANs come in, storage area networks. Those are connected over fiber optics. Why? Because they're faster. They're also faster disk arrays, faster operating systems, but they need to be. Generally, my experience has been that network-attached storage, the speed of the network is the gating, what we call the gating factor, the weak link in the chain, not the speed of the software and the hardware on the network-attached storage. Because they don't need to make them fast, because it's only serving data over a slower network. Nowadays, you know, computers have changed a lot, because for a long time, the processor was waiting for the hard drive a lot. You know, they wait for the user. They're going to continue to do that. Computers have long been much faster than we are. When you're typing in a word processing document, 90% of the time, 99% of the time, the computer's just saying, go ahead, hit another key. I dare you. You got a key? You got a key for me? Anything? You got anything? Even if you're a 60-word-per-minute typist, it's waiting for you. Nowadays, though, hard drives have gotten faster and faster and faster, and we're now getting to the point where part of the reason your new computer is so much faster is you've got much faster drives over much faster connections with much faster processors. Nobody's waiting anymore. Everybody's doing lickety-split. You're the slow link in the chain. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, going down to the tech river. Fetching a heap and serving of tech goodness. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Emilio Lubbock, Texas. You're next. Hi, Emilio.
Yo, what's up, bro?
What's up?
You know, chilling. So I have a time capsule here, and I feel silly calling because I feel like I should be more knowledgeable given that I'm, you know, I consider myself, oh, you know, I know what I'm doing, I think.
Yeah, but the time capsule, this is why you're having problems. You know what you're doing. The time capsule is designed for normal users who don't know what they're doing.
Well.
This was Apple's backup solution, which I don't recommend and don't use because it's really, it's designed for people who will never back up and don't want to back up and just want something automatic. But it gives you very few settings and features.
Well, and all I use mine for is just to throw stuff on that I'm not going to use. I mean, I boot it up maybe once a month, if that. It's more of just a long-term storage, you know.
Well, that's not how it's supposed to be used. It's supposed to be used as it's on continuously using Apple's Time Machine to back up.
Oh, well, I hate Time Machine. I use SuperDuper. So.
Me too. Okay, so we're on the same page here. What you wanted was, it's kind of like our previous caller, network-attached storage. In the case of the time capsule, it's actually a hard drive inside your Airport Extreme wireless access point. But that's all it is. It's like network-attached storage. It's the same idea. It's, you know, it's accessible over the network.
Right. Well, I have a NAS, which is not a problem. But my deal is I'm having issues with broadcasting, right? So basically my host system doesn't work now, and I don't know what to do since I'm out of warranty. Like, I don't see the hard drive mounting. I don't see the broadcast signal from my wireless router. Nothing works. Just out of the blue.
Yeah, I don't know. One trick you can play with the Airport Extreme is resetting it. You know, there's that little pinhole on the back.
Yeah, I tried all three methods of resetting, and none of that still worked. And I'm just like, wow, this has never happened ever. Like, I'm just at a loss. And I looked online to see what Google had to say, and it really didn't help me there. So I don't know. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's ever had this issue.
Yeah. Have you found anything?
No, it just was. I looked on Google and YouTube, and it was just basic stuff that is not helping me.
Could be the hard drive just died. Maybe the hard drive just died. Is that possible?
I can buy that, but should it affect the broadcast signal of the wireless portion?
Well, so the whole router's dead.
I'm not even getting my broadcast signal.
Oh, the whole router's dead.
Yeah, and I had to get one of them crusty Cisco routers I have in the closet, which I'm not happy about. But
okay,
you know.
So you know what? This happens, Emilio, and I have to say, I for years recommended the Airport Extreme as the best router. It was a much more expensive choice, almost $200.
Right.
In my opinion, it is not the best Wi-Fi router out there by a long shot, and certainly not for that price. So it might be time just to bail on it, even if you're all Mac.
The thing I have to always consider is the accessibility aspect of it all. So that's always my thorn in my.
Are you blind?
Yeah.
Okay. So does the Time Machine have good accessibility for you?
No, I mean I can get around to know what I'm doing. I mean it's.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're using Macs, and Apple has the airport management utility, and that's pretty accessible for you, right? You can use
that. Yeah.
So on any other router, you're going to use the browser. And
very much.
Yeah, but if you've got a good screen reader, you should be able to.
Well, good is all relative, mind you. You know, I have to have three or four just to do what you can do. So it's all, you know, it just depends on how good it's going to work.
Yeah.
Because I've used browser interfaces before, and they don't work well.
No, I understand. That's a critical function for you. Accessibility is key. You have to be able to use it. On that one, I'm no expert. I have to say, in my experience with the Airport Extremes, I have a fairly late model Airport Extreme. I bought it only a couple of years ago, and it just got super flaky on me. And I replaced it with an Asus AC3200. However... I don't know about accessibility, but with the browser interface, that thing is complicated. That's got like 30 pages of settings on it, and it might be.
Well, there you go. If it's complicated for you, I sure.
Yeah, it might be over. Yeah, well, I just don't mess with it. I just turn it on and forget it.
Another quick question. So I'm using a Bluetooth wireless headset, and I'm using a Logitech. But I'm wondering if you or the chat room has any recommendations on a Bluetooth wireless headset combo that gives you the better microphone quality. So, like, I'm using an H800, which is – I've been using it for several years now.
Parrot.
And it works fine.
Parrot.
Okay.
And the reason I say that, every truck driver I know uses a Parrot headset. So there's two reasons it's better. First of all, it's a boom. So one of the reasons a lot of Bluetooth sound terrible is because the microphone is where your ear is, because it's just a thing in your ear, right? Maybe it's got a little piece sticking out that's the microphone. But essentially, as you know, when you get farther away from a microphone, you sound a lot worse. And that's kind of part of the problem. So microphones, now, admittedly, a lot of people don't want Bluetooth headsets with a boom mic because it's bigger and clunkier. Truck drivers don't mind. They're sitting in the cab. They're on the phone a lot. That's a good idea. And you look like the Time Life operator with it. I admit it. In fact, it's maybe a little more comfortable because it's it goes over your head like headphones. Usually just one earpiece and a boom mic. But the other reason it's good is it's got excellent noise cancellation. That's the other reason I think drivers like it, because you don't hear the engine. You sound like you're in a quiet room. So a lot of people use the Parrots. Plantronics also makes very nice headsets with decent noise cancellation and maybe better microphone booms. You get a choice of lengths with Plantronics. Jawbone, of course, has always had the best noise cancellation. They have some as well, but in most cases with the Jawbone, the microphone is very far from your mouth. The farther from your mouth, if you think about it, not only does it reduce quality, but you're going to pick up more noise because it's got to listen to a larger area, right? When I'm with Mars Studio mics, they work the best when I'm very close to it. But as soon as I get off the mic, you can hear more room noise. You can hear more, and my voice gets fainter. The whole thing doesn't work as well. So Uncle Bick in our chat room says he loves his Plantronics Voyager. I think that's an excellent choice. And if the Blue Parrot, I think it's called the Blue Parrot. I'll put a link in the show notes for this, because this is universally recommended by truck drivers everywhere. Wendy in Altadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Wendy.
Hey, Leo. I love how you alternate geek callers and Luddite. I'm closer to the Luddite. I was accused by my 20-something nephew of being one. So I've been on the internet since he was born.
There you go. Hey, young whippersnapper. He doesn't know from anything.
Yeah, well, here's my worry today, Leo. I saw a sign for an electronics recycling event at a local high school. So I need to make room in my less than 500-square-foot bungalow.
Yes.
And can I just dump my two old Dells without worrying about cleaning my data off them?
See, that's always the issue, is the hard drive. A friend of mine who is an MIT researcher named Simpson Garfinkel some years ago bought used hard drives on eBay. And because he was curious, how many of these hard drives are wiped? None of them were wiped. Some of them came from bank ATM machines and still had much of the bank information on the hard drive.
Wow.
So the problem with a recycler, electronics recycler, is, yeah, maybe. And by the way, these are great events because most of your electronics, including wires, batteries, monitors, hard drives, computers, cannot be recycled by normal recyclers. They have to be sent to a special place.
Mm-hmm.
And so you definitely want to take advantage of this. It is a good idea, if you can, to wipe the hard drives. You don't have to go crazy with 100 passes. One pass is fine. That's the other thing Simpson found out. These multi-pass erasing tools, not necessary. But if you can get the computer to boot, I would. Just run it once. There's a program, DBAN. It will run in DOS. It'll run on any Windows machine. Derek's Boot and Nuke. Run that once, it'll wipe it off, and you're good to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You're not a Luddite. You asked a very good question. Our show today brought to you by my printers. And I use printers plural because we have a lot of Epsons around the old radio ranch. We just bought... I had the Epson Workforce Pro with Precision Core in my office. And Lisa said, I want one of my own. And she said, I'm going to get the EcoTank. And, man, it was fun setting it up. Epson's EcoTank, this is a revolution in printing because the printer comes with 2 years of ink in the box. 2 years of ink in the box. This is kind of like... breakthrough technology. In the case of the one we got, Lisa, the ET4550, it's a wireless all-in-one. That means it's a printer, it's a fax machine, it's a scanner, it's a color copier. Beautiful, crisp, black and white text because it's got that precision core technology in it. 40 million droplets per second. Very fast. I mean, it sounds like it's three passes and it's printed. It goes and it's done. The colors are gorgeous. Auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder. Works wirelessly, too, which I love. Not just, you know, wirelessly printing from your computer, but from your phones and your tablets, too. Supports all the protocols. You know, Google Cloud Print and Apple Air Print and HP Print and all the different cloud prints. I love it. I'm a huge fan. I want you to take a look. And this, the one we got, comes with 2 years of ink, 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages in the box. And when you run out of ink, you buy these low-cost bottles and refill it. Which means you don't have to, you know, you don't have to stop in the middle of your print job for 2 years. It was very easy to set up. I am a huge fan. I want you to check it out. And I really want to praise Epson for doing this because they've really kind of rejiggered how printing technology works and the kind of the value proposition for users. I just think it's great. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. EPSON.com/EcoTank. And by the way, they have big printers with, 20,000 pages in the box, too, for work groups, offices, home offices, for anybody. Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now here he is all the way from Disneyland.
Yes.
Which was sold out for the holiday season.
It was.
You couldn't get in. No parking. Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We also call him the Giz Whiz. And if you don't follow him on Facebook or Twitter, you're missing out on so much fun. If you don't play the What the Heck is a Game at gizwiz.biz, you're missing out. You are, and of course, the Giz Fizz and the daily Giz Whiz at gizwiz.tv. You forget Howard Stern. You, my friend, are the king of all media.
I'm not going to say a thing. Just keep going. I'm liking this.
Dick joins us each and every week with a gadget or two. Recovered from CES.
I did, and I found this at CES, and you may be interested in it or may not. Okay. So I got a Windows 10 PC. And I hooked it up to my, I know it's a joke size for you, my Vizio 39-inch 4K TV.
Oh.
So now
That's funny. Okay, because if that were a computer monitor, I'd be jealous.
Oh, okay, no.
That's
okay.
Huge! If it's a TV, it's like, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, I know. But now when I look at Windows 10 on that,
it's huge.
It's huge. I can read my email without glasses.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a neat little guy. So this is not to be your everyday work computer. It's called the Kangaroo. So it's Windows 10.
I'm a huge fan.
Oh, do you know the Kangaroo?
I own one. I bought it with my own darn hard-earned money.
I got home and I said, how could this be for
$99?
And so I hooked up a Bluetooth keyboard and a mouse, and then you can hook it to any. In my kitchen, I have a little 13-inch monitor that has HDMI in. So I started out with it in the kitchen, and I go, wow, works on the 13-inch. How's it going to be on the 39-inch? Put it in, and I thought, this looks better than television.
Get ready for this. Yes. I hook it up to my iPad.
You can.
And it's amazing. Yeah. I have touch. It uses the keyboard I got for the iPad on my iPad Pro. It's amazing.
Good. Good. Dennis said, you think he's going to like that? I said, we'll find out in about three minutes.
I carry it in my man purse.
Yes, yes. And the neat thing is that you can buy another dock for $39.
The dock is cool, yeah. It comes with one dock. So.
It comes with one dock. But if like at the office, if you want to have a hookup there, all you have to do is go back and forth with the Kangaroo main part itself, which is like the size of a large smartphone.
Yeah, or deck of cards. I mean, it's not big.
You know, it's not. It's
and
not.
It's not. Okay. Now, admittedly, not the fastest PC in the world, but for most things, it's pretty good. And you know what? The reason I carry it around with my iPad, and now I have both an iPad and a Windows 10 PC in the box.
That's right? Yes, that is an ideal use for that.
It's
exactly.
Amazing.
And if the kids are using the computer all the time and you need it, buy them one of these for $99. They can hook it to any monitor that has HDMI in. It's 32 megabytes of memory, but it has a micro SD card, so you can easily add a ton more memory for very little money.
Yep.
And
battery, too, by the way, because
yes!
it'll run for 4 hours off a charge.
Yeah, except in the specs it says 4 hours casual use.
Yeah, well.
So,
yeah.
So I thought that's like you put your feet up, you get a drink of scotch, and you go, okay, now.
It's
now
pretty I'm amazing.
Gonna get,
yeah,
now I'm
going to
get 4 hours out of it. Yeah.
No, you know what's funny? I think it was Paul Thurrott, the host of our Windows Weekly show,
told
me about it. And I said, that can't be true. And I ordered it. I thought, this is for $95, this is almost an impulse purchase. But I've been very happy with it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an aluminum case. It's
well
really
made.
Nice.
Oh, it has a fingerprint reader that works with Windows Hello.
And Bluetooth. And
it's very secure, too, because you can have it. Don't log in unless I have the fingerprint. I mean, it's really pretty neat. They make it by, it's made by Foxconn for InFocus. And you know the name InFocus because they've been making projectors for years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And not a lot of crap on Windows. It's just like Windows.
Yeah. In fact, so little that if you want to use it with an iPad, you have to download their free application from their website for both the iPad and that's in the App Store. And then for the Kangaroo PC as well. It's called the Kangaroo. And I'm with you. I like this.
InFocus.com/Kangaroo.
You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. That's his website where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest. Every other month, he gives away a large number of autographed Mad magazines. Brand new contest just began 2 weeks ago. So you have plenty of opportunities to get in and win. And again, don't forget his podcast with Chad Johnson, OMG Chad. It's at gizwiz.tv. And they're looking for a few good supporters. Kick in a buck or two for the show, and everybody will be happy. Hey, thank you, Dick.
Yeah, thank you. That's great.
Appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
Okay, buddy.
Wendy and that was Wendy in Altadena. Let's say hi to Clay in Highland, California. Hi, Clay.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I got a question. For about the last 3 or 4 months, I get emails. It says it's from Google, two different email accounts. And it says, basically, somebody just tried to access my account. I should use genuine Gmail or Google stuff. And then there's a button that says, check your devices. I've never touched it.
Good man.
Afraid of what might happen.
Right. Now, by the way, that might be legitimate, but you should never click a link in email, because, especially if it's a button, because that can obscure what's really there. But here's how do you use Gmail, Google Mail?
Well, my one account is Gmail. The other one is basically Google.
So in Gmail, you go to your gmail.com, logged into your account, at the very bottom, and you can trust it now because you're on HTTPS. That means secure.
Right.
You can trust it. At the very bottom, there is information about who's used your account. What internet addresses they've logged in from.
And
now, don't be – sometimes you could be scared because, for instance, if you use it on your smartphone, you may say, well, wait a minute. I didn't log in from Vienna, Virginia. That might be the smartphone company's, home base.
Right.
So go to the very bottom, and I'm looking at mine. It says last account activity 0 minutes ago because I'm logged in. Open in 6 other locations, and then it has a link that says details. That's safe to click. That's the same link that, if that email's legit, will be in that email. This is activity on your Google account. And you can do it for both accounts. And, be a little cautious because, you may see, like I see a Virginia login. Wait a minute, I'm not in Virginia. Oh, but that's coming from, you have to do some digging to figure out, that's that application I authorized. That's Twitter or whatever, right?
Okay.
So you should check those, but it's worth doing this on a regular basis. I really love what Google does in terms of safety. And yeah, sometimes you will get emails from Google, but you're right. Don't click the link in any email, even if you say, oh, it's from Google, it's safe. It could be spoofed. Clicking links in email is dangerous, especially if it's a button, because you don't know where you're going to end up. You might even get a page that looks just like Google that asks you to log in. Then they got you. So anytime that happens, take it seriously, but go there directly, type it in your address bar, and you'll be much, much safer. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.